Next case is Brown v. Butts, 03-1997. Is that Ms., Ms., or Mrs. Kim?
Ms. Kim.
Ms., all right. Ms. Kim?
May it please the Court, my name is Lorna Kim and I represent the plaintiff appellate, Mr. David Brown. This is an appeal of the District Court's dismissal of Mr. Brown's complaint for failure to state Section 1983 claims for violations of his equal protection and due process. Mr. Brown argues that the dismissal of his claims against the defendant should be reversed. In the alternative, if the court finds any legal deficiency in those claims, Mr. Brown asks the court to vacate the dismissal and remand to allow an opportunity to amend his complaint. Mr. Brown is a detainee of the Illinois Department of Human Services Sexually Violent Persons Treatment and Detention Center, or I will be referring to it as the DHS facility. He's been a detainee there since 1999, where he's awaiting his civil commitment hearing under the Illinois Sexually Violent Persons Act. On the evening of May 4, 2001, Mr. Brown, a Caucasian, was severely beaten by an African-American resident, GB, in the DHS facility's day room.
And you've alleged a failure to protect, and that's basically what your claim boils down to, but in most of our cases where we find that there has been a failure to protect, it usually involves, almost universally involves, a specific risk to a specific inmate. How does your complaint, as it's pled, allege anything other than a general threat posed by GB to the residents at the facility in general?
Well, Mr. Brown did plead a specific threat. That substantial threat would be GB was well known of the defendants that he was a serial violent offender.
Right, but your complaint doesn't allege threats to Brown or other Caucasians. It just says threats to other residents. Isn't that a general threat?
It is not. The fact of the matter was that GB posed a serious threat of attacking any white or any Caucasian resident, including Mr. Brown, and the defendants had knowledge of this. They thus should not have left GB unsupervised in the day room with Mr. Brown because of this known risk of harm. And this is what the Sixth Circuit so held in Green, in the Green opinion, stating where a specific individual possesses a risk to a large class of inmates, that risk can also support a finding of liability of deliberate indifference.
Can you cite any cases in which this court or any others other than that Sixth Circuit case has found deliberate indifference when the alleged threat was posed to the general population as opposed to the plaintiff in general?
Well, in the Billman versus Indiana Department of Corrections, there was a serial rapist in which the defendants there had known of the serial rapist. However, they had placed an inmate, the plaintiff, in a cell with this serial rapist, however, did not inform that plaintiff of that risk, and essentially that was a substantial risk to that inmate because he was subsequently raped.
Well, isn't that kind of a different situation because they're in the cell together?
No, it's not.
A serial rapist?
I mean, whether it be in the cell or whether it be in the DHS facility day room, there is a substantial risk that...
No, but I'm just saying in terms of a rape, if that's the problem, a serial rapist, and here an inmate is housed with another inmate in a cell, you know, and they're there overnight together, and I mean, there's certainly a greater likelihood of risk of harm given the nature of the serial conduct.
Well, here, GB is known to be a serial violent offender as well, and he was left unsupervised in the DHS facility day room. It's very similar to the facts stated in Billman. Moving on to continue on with the due process rights, he did sufficiently, as I have stated, Mr. Brown did state a substantial risk that deliberate indifference was that the defendants knew, and Mr. Brown alleged that the defendants had knowledge of GB's propensity of attacking Caucasian residents, and that they knew it from their personal observations or from information that they learned in the course of their duties at the DHS facility. Each of the defendants is alleged to have failed to have taken steps that would have prevented GB's attack in the day room.
Did you investigate any other specific instances that he had attacked other residents, specific incidents?
Well, based upon Mr. Brown's knowledge and what was pled in the complaint, he personally did not have specific knowledge. But again, that's not really what's at point.
That's what I'm asking you, if the answer is yes or no.
We do not know.
Do you have any factual evidence that would have allowed you to put more specifics in your complaint?
We do not know, because Mr. Brown, just the nature of being in the detention center, does not have access to that kind of information.
Is there some reason why you didn't file a formal motion to amend your complaint?
We did request to file a third amended complaint if the district court had found some deficiencies. However, we did not, or were not able, or we were not afforded an opportunity to make that amendment.
Did you file a request outlining what other information you had?
We did not have that opportunity, unfortunately.
Because you didn't have the other information that way.
Excuse me?
Because you didn't have the other specific information.
Exactly. We did not have that specific information available to us because we did not have access or an opportunity to investigate the DHS facility's files or interview any employees there. Going back to the equal protection claim, Mr. Brown has sued for violations of his equal protection rights, alleging discrimination against him on account of his race. He alleges that because he was Caucasian, five of the defendants, one, failed to protect him from GB, two, failed to adequately investigate GB's attack against him and other Caucasians, three, failed to adequately punish GB for his attack against Mr. Brown, and four, failed to enforce policies that would have prevented the attack. As an initial matter, the state has conceded 2 points under the equal protection claim. Mr. Brown did state a claim against defendants Mr. Tyler, Ms. Smith, Mr. Clark, and Mr. Pommier. These are security therapy aides at the DHS facility, or yes, the SBA.
And Ms. Kim, you're in your rebuttal time. I just wanted you to be aware of it.
You
can certainly use your time. But
I'll use some of my time, please.
All right.
For failing to protect Mr. Brown, and Mr. Brown did state a claim against the defendant, Mr. Hobson, the Internal Affairs Director, for failing to investigate GB's attack of Mr. Brown. At a very minimum, this court should reverse the district court's dismissal as to those claims. Beyond that, Mr. Brown believes the equal protection violation claim should be reinstated in its entirety. In particular, as to the SGAs, it's certainly plausible that they may have had a role in investigating GB's attack against Mr. Brown, even if they did not lead the investigation. They also may have been involved in recommending or influencing any punishment meted out to GB. Finally, they may have failed to implement facility policies relating to any of the foregoing. As to the Internal Affairs Director, Mr. Hobson, it's similarly plausible that he could have had a role in preventing the attack on GB, particularly if he had investigated GB's previous attacks and knew GB likely would attack again. He also may have had a role in deciding the punishment given to GB. The state argues that the FTA's only possible liability could be for failure to protect GB, and that Mr. Hobson's only possible liability could be for failure to investigate. But in making this argument, the state relies on assumptions about the duties of those personnel which are not pled in the complaint. That is impermissible in a Rule 12b-6 motion. If there are no further questions.
You'll save some time.
Yes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Vlahakis? Vlahakis. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. My name is James Vlahakis. I'm representing Dr. Raymond Wood. Dr. Wood, as pled in the complaint, is the clinical director at the Joliet Treatment Detention Facility. He's been sued in his personal and official capacity. Right now, there's a bench trial pending before Judge Lionel. We're dealing with issues related to this facility. The court appears to focus directly on the arguments we've raised in our briefs that have shown a generalized harm to residents at the Joliet CDF. He has not shown that GB poses a specific risk to him. Typically, the cases involve a resident, whether it's in a DOC facility or a pretrial detainee situation, complaining to security staff that they are afraid they're going to be attacked by rival gang members as a general matter or by an individual person.
That may be the typical fact pattern, but is that legally required in order to sustain the pleading?
It is not legally required. This court has not clearly stated that you must identify that a particular resident is going to attack me. However, the allegation in this case, we believe, is almost pled out of court by saying such a generalized risk to the entire Caucasian population at the Joliet CDF. The fact that GB may have attacked them in the past is not sufficient enough to show that Mr. Brown is at risk in this case.
He doesn't have to show anything at this stage, isn't that right? All he has to do is allege.
Yes, the lead is very liberal pleading, of course, but the general harm here does not show a substantial risk to him.
He has to show nothing. All he needs to do is allege. And the allegation is that he was placed in the day room together with this other detainee or inmate with the propensities that are alleged and with the history that is alleged. Isn't that sufficient to survive a motion to dismiss?
I don't believe, as we set forth in our briefs, the substantial risk element is not being shown by the fact that a resident poses a risk to the entire community. The case of
You're using the language of summary judgment, counsel. Again, the plaintiff needs to show nothing. All he needs to do is allege very basic facts. So if you would use the language of a motion to dismiss, please.
That is correct. In our briefs that we do acknowledge are the cases that we primarily rely on for this background are summary judgment cases, because I have not come across a case specifically touching on this issue. The Sixth Circuit has in that context. But the cases that are relied on by the plaintiff with Billman, that is a specific risk in that case by showing that the person was placed in the cell with somebody who would be prone to rape. Here, the generalized complaint, I don't believe, puts our clients on enough notice of this, that anybody from the facility could be a harm to somebody. And where do you stop at that point?
Well, if the plaintiff's complaint alleged that GB posed a threat to Caucasian residents as opposed to merely other residents, would you agree that such allegations would be sufficient to state a failure to protect claim?
I believe it's closer. He has pled in the complaint that it was the Caucasian population, not just the general population, the Joliet TDF. That, I believe, the population is approximately 80% Caucasian to CDF. I think that still shows such a generalized risk to the entire population that does not sufficiently put anybody on notice.
Well, couldn't knowledge of a general threat posed by a particular individual be the basis of a failure to protect claim? For example, if a resident had a history of beating up the first person he sees each day, and after each incident, he is put in segregation and then eventually let out into the general population where he once again beats up the first person he sees, and he's done it 100 times. Wouldn't his 101st victim have a failure to protect claim against his custodians for letting the resident into the population the 101st time?
I would agree with that premise, yes. The other reason, though, to affirm the court below is the fact that these allegations were made on information belief. Traditionally, the information belief argument really relies primarily on allegations dealing with fraud. But here, the plaintiff, I believe, should have some general basis to make these allegations. Simply saying that I don't know anything and I assume the facility should know this, we don't believe is enough. The court did focus on that in one aspect. The main aspect, though, again, is the harm issue. I do understand your statement that if somebody's doing it 101 times, you're going to know if there's a substantial risk that person is going to do it again. That goes to the deliberate indifference argument. Here, if he has been a threat to the Caucasian population, just as a general matter, I don't think that hits the second element of Farmer versus Brennan, which shows that there's subjective deliberate indifference. Clearly, the 101st time would be something going closer to subjective knowledge. But here, as it's the two-pronged attack and a two-pronged defense under Farmer, we do not believe that the plaintiff has met either the substantial risk, which is objective, or the subjective deliberate indifference argument. I see my time is up.
Any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Light?
May it please the Court, Eric Light, Assistant Attorney General for the defendants' appellees other than Raymond Wood. Mr. Vlahakis has addressed in count one, the deliberate indifference aspect of count one relating to all the defendants. I've raised an additional argument relating to the policymaking defendants on count one. That's Director Budd, Security Director Glock, and Internal Affairs Investigator Hopson. Mr. Brown's claim against them surely is not that they left GB unattended on that particular day. The claim is that they adopted and implemented inadequate policies and procedures to safeguard him. But to adequately allege such a policies and procedures type claim, Mr. Brown must allege a systematic lapse of prison or security procedures, and he must allege that the policymaking defendants were aware of this and did nothing about it. Otherwise, we have nothing more than a claim of negligence. So that means that in this case, Brown would have had to allege that there was some, that the detainees like GB were systematically left unsupervised, and that the that Mr. Budd, Glotz, and Hobson were aware of this and did nothing about it. Mr. Brown has not alleged any of this. He hasn't alleged that GB or anyone else was systematically left unattended. He hasn't alleged that any of these policymaking defendants were aware of this and failed to take corrective measures. Instead, he's alleged simply that there were inadequate policies and procedures in place to assure that he was protected. But this is insufficient. Under this court's decision in Weiss versus Cooley, the plaintiff brought an action against the sheriff and the jail commander for allegedly implementing an inadequate security classification procedure for new detainees. The district court dismissed that complaint on Rule 12b-6, and this court affirmed, noting that the plaintiff had alleged merely inadequate policies and procedures as opposed to the total lack of policies and procedures. So this is an additional argument that there's not, he failed to allege deliberate indifference as to the policy-making defendants. On the objective prong of a failure to protect analysis, Mr. Brown alleged that GB basically posed a threat to all residents of the facility, that he had attacked Caucasian residents in the past. This is a generalized threat. It's not a specific threat to any particular person. And more important, he's failed to allege a substantial threat, that he faced a substantial threat. Remember, it's not just any threat that satisfies the objective prong of a failure to protect analysis. The plaintiff must allege he faced a substantial threat, a serious injury. And what this court has defined that to mean is a threat that is so high, so great, that it's almost likely to occur, it's almost certain to occur, if nothing is done to prevent it. Mr. Brown has not alleged such a substantial threat to his safety. There's no allegation that GB ever threatened him, no allegation that Mr. Brown was ever attacked, no allegation of any animosity between GB and Mr. Brown. And in fact, there's one allegation in the complaint which seems to undermine the notion that there is such a substantial threat to his safety, and that's the allegation that he was detained for 17 months before anything happened. The complaint says that he arrived in the facility in December of 1999, and the only allegation of anything happening to him was that it occurred in May of 2001, which is 17 months later. It's hard to imagine that that's a substantial threat, that is a threat that's almost certain to occur, if it didn't occur for 17 months.
Well, counsel, this may be has been the first time that these two inmates were in the same isolated place alone together. So you're requiring us to make a lot of leaps beyond what's in the complaint. This is a real light touch standard of review on a motion to dismiss. And can't we, drawing all reasonable inferences in favor of the pleader here, infer that the allegations about being placed with this inmate who has the propensities and the history that is alleged in the complaint being placed unsupervised together in the day room is enough to constitute the substantial direct threat to this plaintiff.
Well, I would agree that the court probably could imagine circumstances where it was the first time that they were together. The question again is whether it's a substantial threat to his safety. Has he alleged a substantial threat? And the fact that that GB has attacked other Caucasian residents in the past, I submit, does not mean that he was such a substantial threat to any Caucasian resident he came into contact with, that he was almost certain to attack them.
Thank you. How much time for Ms. Kim? 1 minute, Ms. Kim.
Your Honors, I'd like to clarify a couple points. One, that we were appointed as counsel for the appellate appeal, so we were not involved in the drafting of the amended or the second amended complaint. My second point on the questions of generalized risk, I'd like to point out that the population at risk in Billman was actually broader than in this case. In Billman, presumably the entire population where any inmate of the prison could end up in the serial rapist cell was at risk of violence by the serial rapist. Here, it was only Caucasians that were at risk. If there are no further questions, I'd like to briefly conclude.
All right.
Mr. Brown respectfully requests that the court allow him to proceed with his claims against the defendants and to commence discovery to establish his claims. He has stated claims for relief and asks his district court's dismissal be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. And we thank you for accepting this appointment. It's very important to our system of justice that counsel are willing to step up to the plate and represent individuals like Mr. Brown.
Thank
we
you.
Thank you for your fine arguments, and the case will be taken under